The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the fabulous K4 Wins. K4 Wins, one of the hottest handicapping shows there is in radio, and it's the four of us, the four Ks. We, of course, have Kit Keeper, who will join us here in just a second. Case Keeper, who, of course, is spot on there, ground zero in Las Vegas. Las Vegas Sunny is the chief editing. I'm Tony Curry, doing sports radio for 25, 30 years, working at ESPN. And Kai Gregory, who has been playing both sides for a long period of time, has got his fingers on the pulse of everything that is gambling. Major League Baseball, we are at the 10 or less point of the season, 10 or less games for most teams. Is this the widest open that we've ever seen a Heisman Trophy race? We'll talk about that coming up. And are the Miami Dolphins already done? They get the loss last night. They're now 0-3. We'll start with Case. Are the Miami Dolphins finished? As of right now, they are tied with the Tennessee Titans with a 4% chance to make the playoffs. It's hard to believe that three games into the season, Tua Tagovailoa is already done.
Yeah, they're probably done as far as the playoffs. 0-3 is just a little harder to come back from. We'll see what ends up happening with Mike McDaniel. I'll tell you what they're not done from is me betting them. I think they're a ton of value on this team right now. I mean, the market has them as like one of the worst teams in the NFL. I loved them last night. I think I gave it out at the end of the show. I had a bunch of pro prop bets that went well too. I know they're not good. They're, like I said, out of the playoff race. I bet them last week too, and obviously that didn't come through. But I don't really see them as with the dregs of the NFL. I know defensively they have major problems, but Achan is still quite a weapon. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, still a pretty good 1-2 wide receiver. So unless Mike McDaniel gets fired and they totally go off the rails and quit, which I know people are already saying they quit, which I've just totally bet against the last 2 weeks. I don't think you quit this early in the season. I just need a little bit more evidence to scare me away from not betting them permanently, because I don't think they're quite as bad as the market prices them right now. But yeah, 0-3 for your long-term prospects, I got to say it's probably done.
We also had the over last night, the college football game, the only one, Charlotte, and the Rice over last night. I think it was 42.5, hit 45 last night. A winner, winner, any way you can take it. Kai, what's our numbers look like?
Yesterday, 1-0-1 with a push on the Buffalo team total. I'll tell you what, I still think Vegas hadn't caught up in those halftime lines, because it's an easy bet. I had Miami in the first half over 9.5 points, and Miami over 19.5 points of the game. I don't know what Vegas was thinking about Buffalo's defense, because Buffalo's defense is just not that great, in my opinion. And again, Miami with that 1-2 punch at wide receiver. And Tua, it's not like Tua sucks. If he doesn't have a concussion, he's a decent quarterback, you know, he likes to sling it. So love that. We talked about it Tuesday, 14-6-1 last weekend, year to date, 781, 420, and 15. And, you know, to all our subscribers, everybody follows, you know, the plays are cutting down during the week, because baseball, you never know, you know, 10 games to go, and the way things are going right now is really difficult when you look at some of the games to predict the pitch counts, who's going to hold up, who's going to sit somebody. This is the time where people that are betting on baseball really, really, really need to pay attention to the lineups, who's in contention, who's not, who's playing who has the easiest schedule to get to the wild card and playoffs and all of those things.
We saw a first-time Hall of Famer, Clayton Kershaw, hanging up after 18 seasons last night, too. Going to be sad to see him go. What a fantastic pitcher he's been in Major League Baseball. One game, Kip Kiefer. We've got just a slew of them going in here to week 3 and 4, slash, depending on whether you're counting week 0. But that's really intriguing to you. We went through, of course, our 2 or 3 games on the starting lineup on our bankroll game. But what's one game you cannot wait to see tomorrow?
I mean, I'm probably most looking forward to the Florida Gators at the OK Corral, otherwise known as Hard Rock Stadium, against the Miami Hurricanes. I walked away impressed and distressed, let's use two rhyming words, from their game last week at LSU. I thought the eye test for me, Florida was the better team. Now, maybe that was just that night. I'm talking about personnel wise now. Florida's defense, very solid. LSU's quote explosive offense, not so much. They win the game 20-10, but the last touchdown was a pick six by the LSU defense. Brian Kelly's making the excuse that Nussmeier's got some kind of torso injury and is not 100%. I don't know if that's true or untrue. But, I certainly was impressed, again, with the Gators' physicality and their personnel. I think the wrong team maybe won that game. I think it, more or less the strategy of Hugh, I mean, I'm about to say Hugh Freeze. I'm getting him and Billy, Sunbelt Billy, kind of confused these days because they make similar tactical decisions. They threw the ball 49 times in that game. They acted like they were down several touchdowns. It was a 3-point or tie game most of the time. There was no reason to abandon the running game and just start putting it up for grabs. Yeah, Lagway threw 5 interceptions. When you throw it 50 times, you're going to have a high degree of possible interceptions. So I really kind of intrigued by this game because I think it's kind of a last stand for the Gators. Another loss here. They'll have 3 already. Basically, they're pretty much down the drain with Texas and at Texas A&M next on their schedule. So I really kind of think you're going to see a last stand kind of mentality from this team. And I know Miami's been impressive. But other than the Notre Dame win, I mean, let's once again consider opponents. South Florida came in with a lot of hoopla because they beat Boise and Florida, and they deserved a lot of credit. But I still I'm kind of waiting for a little bit of an off performance from Miami, a little bit of a bummer. I know personnel wise they're really good. They're better than LSU, probably personnel wise, or at least on the same level. But I just can't escape the fact that everybody's kind of gone Miami, 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 and I just have this feeling in a rivalry game like this that Florida's going to play big.
Well, I cannot believe that you're actually saying that South Florida, the way you sounded, was like South Florida really wasn't a good peg on whether Miami's a good football team at this point. I mean, I don't know what else they could do.
Is it a good peg that Florida's a bad team? Because South Florida beat Florida and lost to Miami by 170.
Yeah, but Florida kind of beat themselves in that game, fellas. I don't think South Florida went in there and beat Florida. I think, once again, they've got a huge coaching problem at Florida. I think the strategy Billy Napier used down the stretch, again, there's no way that game should even been that close at the end. And they just mismanaged the game and made ridiculous mistakes. So, again, I'm not taking any away from South Florida. They started off as impressively as anybody in the country, but I'm going to go on record right now and say South Florida is going to be a 4 or 5 loss team by the end of the year.
Well, and that may be a reason why so many people. Yeah, I'm a little surprised there. Mark that. I'm a little surprised, and I guess that the line has moved as much as it is because right now Miami. I just saw a 10 for the Miami Hurricanes, so everyone's betting money on the Hurricanes.
I'm not saying they went straight up. I say Florida's the play.
Yeah, well, you're getting Florida plus 9.5, and it was 6.5 a week ago. So that is certainly the ways to go. Lots of different games going on. Arkansas, Memphis, we'll talk about that. Texas Tech, Utah, of course, a matchup of top 25. Syracuse and Clemson, can they get right, give it up 16.5? You have a couple of rivalry games, really weird. Washington, Washington State. And of course, the rivalry game, Oregon, Oregon State, looks like it's going to be a blowout. Illinois, Indiana, very interesting game in the Big Ten. And we just mentioned the Heisman Trophy. Right now, it is Carson Beck and John Mateer, about the same odds, but they are the furthest odds this late into the season since 2012 for the Heisman Trophy. I want to throw it out the case. Is this the widest open you've ever seen a Heisman Trophy going into week 4?
Wow, I'm glad you had that number. 2012, I believe, is Derrick Henry, too, which has a special place in my heart, the first Heisman future I ever hit. I was betting like nothing back then, but still nice. Mateer, I wish we could just end it right now, though. I do think Mateer and Beck would probably win if we voted right now, and I have both of those guys. So it's pretty nice to see them both 8-1 at the top of the board. I didn't have the stat like you, so thanks for putting that out. But, yeah, I was going to answer that, yes, it does seem the most wide open it's been at this point in a while. I mean, usually you have at least one or two guys that separated themselves from the pack, but I'm just glancing down right now, like it looks like we have 12 guys at 25-1 or less, and then like
there are two Ohio State quarterbacks on this list. I mean, that's how wide open it is.
Yeah, two Ohio State players. Yeah, Jeremiah Smith 16 and Sayan at 17. There's Julian Sayan at 17 is the one of all these first 15 guys or 16 guys that are 30-1 or less of the odds I'm looking at. I would scratch off Julian Sayan. I haven't been impressed by him. And I feel like if Ohio State is undefeated and is the best team, there's so much hype on Jeremiah Smith and he's going to have such a big share of Julian Sayan stats. I guess chop this, you'd come back and embarrass me, but Sayan would be the scratch off for me right now of these top 16, actually probably Jackson Arnold too. He's 22-1. I haven't seen enough from him passing wise, but I mean, literally just about anybody else you could convince me, pretty crazy, just how wide open it is right now.
John Mateer, not taking anything away from him. He's looked fantastic this season. He's only had 5 touchdowns and 3 picks. I mean, he's not this guy, certainly depending on whether you're playing, you know, Sisters of the Poor and stuff, you usually see a guy with like 10 touchdowns and 3 picks by this time of the season. And all of a sudden you got a guy leading the Heisman Trophy with only 5 touchdowns and 3 picks. He is completing about 67% of his passes. That defense is lights out fantastic for Oklahoma, and I think that's where we're going to see just a wonderful game this weekend, Kai, between the Auburn Tigers. We certainly want to get local here because we do the show in Birmingham, Alabama, but the Auburn Tigers catching now 7 against Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, of course, a lot of people are actually saying that whoever wins this game is going to have an inside track on not only in the SEC, but perhaps making that 12-team playoff. Do you see it that way?
No. I don't think Auburn has a chance at getting into the playoffs. I'm really intrigued that the over-under in that game's dropped 3 points since the opening, but I'm going to go backwards real quick for 10 seconds. Heisman Trophy, long shot, throw it in there right now. He's going to have probably 500 yards passing this weekend and get to 1,500 yards passing. Jaden Maeva from USC. I like his schedule and what he can do. He could creep up there, and he's got a coach that will let him throw and let him score as many touchdowns as he can get. Anyway, back to Auburn, Oklahoma. I just don't think – I mean, I like Auburn's talent. I don't think Auburn has a chance at the playoffs first. I don't think Oklahoma has a chance at the playoffs either, just in my opinion. But I do think Oklahoma is going to win this game. I really would have liked it to go the other way for me. I don't know that Auburn's defense can slow down Oklahoma. I really don't. And I think Oklahoma's defense will be fired up to stop their ex-quarterback.
Yeah, and I think this is where we're going to see, much like we did this past weekend with Gunnar Stockton, I think we're going to see these quarterbacks kind of come into their own. Is Jackson Arnold, I know, and people just love this whole revenge thing. He's going back to where he got cut and blah, 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 blah. There is no bad blood there. He did not hate Brent Venables. He left on his own accord, so it was all good. And yeah, would it be nice and a good story for him to go back into Oklahoma and certainly get a victory? I think it'd be fantastic. Just something to keep in mind. Auburn has not defeated a top 15 team on the road in 11 years.
Auburn has not
defeated a top 15 team, yeah, in 11 years, and they've lost 8 straight top 25 teams on the road as well. So this is not a team that plays very well on the road, and really a great opportunity for Hugh Freeze. I know anytime you can start the season 3-0 at Auburn, you got yourself something special. He's riding high, Kip. But I mean, this is you know, certainly from a local standpoint, Auburn Tiger fans are such wusses. They're such babies. That they're really quiet. At least Alabama fans put it all out there, like, hey, listen, we suck. We got to do better. Fire our coach. Get us out there. But the Auburn Tigers are just hiding in the woods right now in hopes that no one recognizes them and they can kind of slide in at 3-0 and somehow get a victory this weekend in Norman. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of enthusiasm with Auburn fans if you get them one-on-one, but you don't hear a lot of public outcry that we finally arrived. They know it's really challenging. This game in Norman, next weekend in College Station against Texas A&M, I think they're in a really good position if they can split these two games, because then they have Georgia looming after a bye 2 weeks later. That's a pretty tough patch of games at Oklahoma, at Texas A&M, and home against Georgia. It's challenging. They've still got the new powerhouse in the SEC, Vanderbilt down the road, and of course the Iron Bowl later on. Plenty of challenges on that schedule for Auburn. But you know, I gave them a big credit for winning the game at Baylor. I thought from an athletic standpoint, Baylor brought a lot to the table. I thought the Auburn game plan was simple and designed not to beat themselves, which they did time and time again last year. So props to the coaching staff for that. But I don't think the Jackson Arnold shotgun snap, catch, read, and go is going to work in the SEC very well, because you're going to be playing a lot superior athletes on defense than Baylor brought. And let's just completely ignore the two home games. Come on. Those games meant nothing the last 2 weeks. They did play well against South Alabama, who I think is a pretty respectable team. I'm going to keep an eye on that team and who they play the rest of the year and look for opportunities. But the bottom line is, this is the challenge. The Auburn season starts Saturday, and we will see what that team is truly made of.
K4wins.com, K4wins.com. We'll have all of our plays. We'll go around the horn and give us our best two or three or four plays coming up here in about 10 or 15 minutes. We'll do some NFL action coming up here in just a little bit. Let's look at some interesting games. Cincinnati, Minnesota, Chargers at Phillies. We got KC giving up six and a half at the Giants. Really, Detroit, Baltimore, got some huge games we'll get into, and also Major League Baseball inside 10 games. For the rest of the season, some more college football we'll get into right now. Let's get into that national twist there, Case, in Texas Tech and Utah. No, normally, when you throw a game out, they're like, but these are two decent teams that maybe have a shot at some postseason play in their top 25 teams, getting after it, rambling it up. Utah giving up 3.5. How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I said it Tuesday, but it's the game of the day to me. Whoever wins is a clear favorite in the Big 12. Doesn't mean they're going to win. I still think there's some parity in that league. What we've seen now, Utah settle in about a 3-point favorite. I like Utah a little bit. I mentioned on Tuesday, the one thing that concerns me is I literally now Tuesday I'm going more straight off my own feelings, my own numbers and stuff, and I thought Utah should be a little higher favorite. Now that I've talked to people and heard the chatter, I've literally probably heard 15 people pick Utah and one person pick Texas Tech, and the one person that picked Texas Tech is the sharpest bettor in the world that I know. So it kind of scares me a little bit with that background. I think I don't know. People just like don't want to believe in Texas Tech. I get they've really feasted on some overmatched opponents, but I mean they spent almost $30 million in the transfer portal this offseason. They have a super talented roster. Now, if this was a year or two ago, I'd say, well, that hasn't really worked out. No team's really won at a high level by doing that. But that really changed last year. I mean, Ohio State was the Texas Tech of last year. They won the national
championship. And Texas Tech spent more than Ohio State did last year.
Exactly. I mean, I know they were paying a premium for some of these kids, but I mean, you know, man for man, then maybe you can make a Texas Tech case. It's hard for me to get over going to Rice-Eccles, which I've covered a couple games there. I've been there. I mean, you feel the elevation. It is extremely loud just the way it's shifted. I do think Utah has a little bit better home field advantage than the vast majority of teams in the country. It's a 9 a.m. kickoff. I just think there's
yeah,
some...
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, there's some weird, you know, elements that work in Utah's favor. And I just... their quarterback, Devin Dampier, I think is just... might be the most electric player in the country. I mean, just with what he can do, both throwing, it appears now, and on the ground. Although, you know, if you want to poke holes in him, you could say their best win right now looks like UCLA, who's absolutely awful. So maybe Dampier hasn't completely transformed as much as we've... thought. This is just going to be a really interesting game to answer a lot of those questions. It's not something I've ended up firing on. I still slightly lean to Utah, but I mean, Texas Tech has probably two edge rushers that are going to go on the first day of the NFL draft. So I know, I think one of you pointed it out, and I agree. Utah does have a great offensive line, but that's really strength versus strength, because Texas Tech defensive line might be the strength of their team, along with Baron Morton, too. So I'm really looking forward to this game.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Red Raiders are the first team to actually do a blanket $25,000 per player type of thing for their offensive and defensive lines. When you came in, you just got $25,000 just to play. If you were starting on the offensive or defensive line, you got a $25,000 check right off the bat. So their numbers got up there pretty high. He is the master of the Big Ten because he loves the Big Ten. He dives into it so much. So I have to ask Kip Kiefer about the Indiana Hoosiers and those Illinois Fighting Illini.
Boy.
Interesting game in the Big Ten. We always talk about Penn State, who, again, they're picking Villanova. I don't think Penn State's played anybody worth a shit in about 17 or 18 months. And then, of course, Ohio State, Michigan, they're out. But Illinois and Indiana, do these two teams have anything to say about who's going to win the Big Ten?
I don't think so. You know, Illinois still, what are they, ranked like ninth in a couple of polls or whatever, and their body of work, their big win was against Duke. I got to see it, but I am a Brett Bielema fan going into that game, because I want Kirk Cignetti in Indiana to get pounded by somebody so he'll shut the hell up. This guy is such an idiot, spewing all of his anti-SEC stuff. Well, our fourth place team last year won the national championship. That's a really interesting way to look at things. But you know, I'm sorry, Kurt, your schedule was an absolute joke and you're off to even a worse schedule this year. One of their big wins was over mighty Kennesaw State. I forgot what tomato can they pounded last week. Maybe Illinois is a legitimate opponent. It's at Indianapolis. So that's going to be a tough assignment for Bielma. But two coaches that I'm not real high on, but I just think Indiana is one of the greatest frauds in sports in recent years. And, you know, they even his wife, when he was at James Madison, thinking about when they offered him the job, she supposedly, and he admitted this, he said she pulled up their schedule for 2024 on the computer, goes, honey, I see at least 10 wins for you in this schedule. So, I mean, before Cignetti even got there, they were stacking the deck. Remember, they bought Louisville out of their schedule last year and replaced them with Western Illinois, who they beat 65-0 or whatever. The game at Louisville probably would have derailed the Indiana chances. I will give them credit. Maybe they're the smartest program in the country that realized how inept this system is. Why should we play anybody worth a darn? And last year, they even drew very few Big Ten contenders. They played every bottom feeder of the six teams that didn't even qualify for a bowl in the Big Ten. So that's my interest in that game. I just hope the Illini have the performance of the season for them and win on Indiana's field. That will make me the happiest boy in the whole SEC USA.
You talk about this system. We haven't had this system very long, and it's going to go to 16 teams next year, so it's only going to get worse. But, you know, they put these games out 4, 5, 6, 7 years out.
Yeah, but they change schedules, well, Tony. Well,
they do it occasionally, and you're right. They changed one team. It's not like they're changing their entire schedule.
That was a pretty major change. Louisville was pretty good last year.
It was. And listen, if I'm Indiana and I can play cream puff after cream puff and make it to the playoffs, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah,
I'm
they were smart.
Listen, Cignetti is about the smartest guy out there. Listen, I know what you're saying, and I want to see competition. But if Indiana goes to the team playoff every year playing that schedule, you better believe they're going to have that kind of schedule every single year. Knock yourself out, man. I mean, go after it.
I know Kai loves when Kip and I disagree, and Tony might too. I don't think we've ever disagreed more on something than Kurt Cignetti. I absolutely love this guy. Maybe my favorite coach in the nation. He's been the best coach to bet on in the country, dating back to when James Madison went to FBS. He finds every little edge. And yes, the scheduling does have to do with that. He found an edge and goes, well, everyone's playing these FCS opponents and stuff. Why should I be playing Louisville when I could be playing Eastern Kentucky?
I conceded he was smart. They were smart to do that.
And all these little – I just love that he shows so much personality. I hate – this is
– yeah, that's
16 years in the industry point. Of all these coaches just saying what they're supposed to say. He says stuff like that to get guys like Kip riled up and all pissed off. And
it works.
I just love it. So I'm a big Cignetti guy. I will say, let me get up my numbers on this game. I bet Indiana -3.5 heavy on Monday. I think their roster is way better than Illinois. Yeah, now it's 6. I made it 6.5, so it wouldn't be a bet for me anymore. But I do think I mentioned it Tuesday to lay it. I really think the roster quality is kind of different here. I mean, Indiana, you could even poke holes in them last year, but they got a huge endowment in the middle of last year. We're talking about Texas Tech. I know they're not at that level, but they spent a ton of money. There's some buzz that Mendoza could be a first-round pick. I mean, Altmaier, I gave my props to last week. I think I've been very impressed by him. But, I mean, there's different levels to this potential-wise. I think Mendoza has a higher upside than him. I know Brent Bielema's bully ball, try to push him around up front. Maybe that can work here. But at Indiana, that's tough. And I just – that Duke win on the surface is impressive. They won, 41-17. But they were, like, +4 in turnovers, got every break. No. I'm still not fully sold on Indiana. On Illinois. Indiana, I don't think they're winning the Big Ten, to answer your question or anything, this year. They're not going to be as good as last year. But – I do kind of have them a tier above Illinois. We'll see if that's right or wrong this week.
Thanks to the Coastal Sports Digital Network for having, of course, Tony Curry Radio on. We love our partnership with them, and we're expanding now on Audacity. We're getting bigger and better every single week. The Coastal Sports Digital Network and, of course, SR 1029 The Game. com. And of course, everything down in the Fort Myers area, greatly appreciate you having Tony Curry Radio on. You can hear our podcast on every major industry out there. We're available on everything you get. Plus, of course, live on our Tony Curry Radio YouTube page. Let's go around the horn because we got NFL next. We'll start with Kai Gregory because he is dabbling in numbers. He's sending numbers at 9:30 at night. Hey, have you guys seen this line move 3.5 points? And I'm like, dude, go to bed, man. Go to bed.
No, he is up to his ass. He's up to his ass numbers. 24/7.
4 o'clock in the morning. Oh my gosh, his line has moved from 7.5 to 4. Case, what do you think? I love it. It's great. So give me some games that you're loving. And of course, we already got your two games. You can get those out again that you gave for the starting lineup in our little contest we got going there. But give me some game that you really love this weekend, Kai.
You know, I'm looking for some team totals, but this one just stuck at me that Texas Tech beat Kent State by 48 points, and now Florida State's only a 45-point favorite. And knowing that Florida State's going to want to come in there, and they scored 840 points last week against whoever they played. So, you know, they're looking to do that again. Some of these lines and the moves, and I'm really waiting on some team totals. I'm interested in that Auburn-Oklahoma game. The over-unders dropped 3 points. The Missouri-South Carolina game has dropped 4 points. Missouri opened up 13.5. It's down to 9.5. I realize, you know, we talked about it before the show because they were wondering if Sellers was going to play. I thought he was playing the whole time. One of the games that really interests me, I know Kip will love this and really want to talk about it, is the Michigan-Nebraska game. Michigan, you know, -2 at Nebraska. I'm really liking that Texas Tech-Utah game. The totals come down a little bit, but sitting at 57.5. And I love the trenches matchup. I think Texas Tech has a pretty good defense this year. I leaned Utah at the beginning, and now I'm leaning more towards if I'm going to play it, I'm going to play the under in that game with the early start and everything. I think that's something that could really jump out at people. And I want to see what happens with Case's alma mater, Kansas off a bye, giving up 13 points at home against West Virginia. West Virginia's defense never travels at all, in my opinion. But those are some of the games that I'm looking at early. And then I'm going to go against Kip in this one. That Florida game with Miami, I just you know, what Miami did to South Florida, Miami at home, and I'm really beginning to wonder if after last week, if Florida's not just going to give up. I don't know that I would lay 9. But I just wonder if Florida's just going to just point blank give up at this point.
And for people who keep calling him Sunbelt Billy, it doesn't look like Billy's going to be around much longer if he can start figuring these games out for sure.
He's going to be defensively Billy, Tony.
Defensively speaking, Florida looks fantastic, but you don't win football games by putting up 20 points. It's not going to happen. And again, Miami looks fantastic on both sides of the ball. Casey, we're going to talk to you in just a few seconds here about the National Football League, and I'd love to find out where the National public money is going. One game that I think is really interesting, and then I want you to kind of throw out your plays. Ole Miss, Tulane. It looks like Austin's going to be out, but if you talk to Lane Kiffin, he's in. Not sure which quarterback. A lot of people would say, what's that the backup quarterback's name, Kip, there for Ole Miss, who's fantastic. You love his name so much.
Trinidad is a corrupt.
No, Chambliss.
Chambliss, yes. I almost said Trinidad Chambliss, yeah. I'm calling him Trinidad Carruthers. So.
Trinidad Carruthers, there you go. So backup looks pretty good, but they're only giving up 13.5. I'm assuming the public money is all over an SEC squad like Lane Kiffin playing a little.
Yeah, but did you see their defense last week? Good grief, they're awful.
I know, but public money, is it all going on Ole Miss, Case?
Yeah, you would assume. We talked a little bit about it Tuesday. This line really hasn't moved much at all. I bet Tulane +12.5 early in the week. Maybe it was a slightly bad bet because I do see a couple 13s out there now. I'm probably overreacting to one game, but to be honest, I would rather Austin Simmons start than Trinidad Chambliss. I was really impressed by Chambliss.
Yeah, he's good.
I know he came from Ferris State, the D3 powerhouse. I don't know. I just – Austin Simmons, as high of an upside as he has, I feel like you can count on him making a couple huge mistakes per game. So I honestly would rather him be in, but it sounds like all the reports it's going to be Chambliss. Yeah, this line stayed pretty steady. 12.5-point favorite Ole Miss. I agree with Kip. I don't like their defense much. I think there's been some red flags on this team. I don't think they've been quite as good as I expected coming into the year. I think this is a big spot for Tulane, and I love their coach, John Sumrall. I was kind of down on them coming into the year comparatively. Just everyone was picking them to make the playoff, and I didn't see it. I think now, if anything, they might be a little undervalued. The AAC does look tough. It looks like by far the best Group of Five conference this year. But
Now
Tulane and South Florida are kind of co-favorites. And while I don't agree with Kip, I don't think they're – if South Florida goes 7-5, that would be a disaster. But I do think that Tulane should probably be the favorite, not South Florida. So I'm kind of high on Tulane. I don't necessarily think they win this game, but I think that – they keep it within a touchdown. I like Tulane.
What else do you like, Ace, since you got the horn go?
Yeah, trying to see what numbers to let. Big favorites might be the trend of the week with Kai throwing out Florida State. I didn't bet that one, but one I did bet last night is when it got to 24.5, and I think now it's already gone back up. You can still get a 25. There's still some 24.5s. I laid it with Notre Dame against Purdue, and I've been high on Purdue. I think Barry Odom is a real good turnaround artist. I just feel like stock is a little too far down on Notre Dame. I mean, it took an epic series of events for them to lose last week. I'm extremely high on Miami, and I've kind of come around on Texas A&M too. So I think this is like the best 0-2 we've ever seen. I don't think this is a group that's going to be quitting or anything. I had it more around 28 where it opened. I do like that it does make a lot of sense to me that the total has come down and so has the spread. The weird thing about this Auburn-Oklahoma game that I know you guys, we kind of talked about, but the correlation's just all off. The total keeps dropping and the favorite goes up. It should be almost always the other way. I mean, if you're the better team, you want more trials. So it seems like the spread should be going down. I think I said earlier in the week I'd be interested in Auburn at 7. It's not something I've ended up betting now. I guess I'm getting greedy. I want to see if it gets to 7.5. I'm Mr. Oklahoma. I have futures on them to do everything. It greatly pained me when Kai said they have no chance to make the playoff. I think I have them 5-1 to make the playoff. They're plus 150 now. I think they might win the SEC. I think they've been that good, but still laying 7.5 in a game with like a 45 total. That's a lot. So if that gets to 7.5, I might be interested, in Auburn. I mentioned the Indiana, but I'm trying to scroll to see if I have anything else here. I mentioned too.
What do you have on the USC Michigan State game? Because I am all over USC. It's my favorite play of the week with Arizona State.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't let me bet much. But on Sunday, when One Sports, or it was actually Saturday night, I was at the fight waiting for Terrence Crawford to come out and talk, and I saw some sportsbook posted the biggest numbers. Someone posted USC minus 13.5, so I got a small nibble on that. They wouldn't let me bet much, so I laid 13.5. I made it 18.5. Where are we now? Is it like? Yeah, so it's about right to me now. But I do agree with what you're saying that. I wish I had a way bigger bet on 13.5. It's not even one of my bigger positions of the week. But I do agree with what you're saying that Lincoln Riley does seem like he'll step on some throats. And USC's offense, especially at home, I'm super high on the Trojans, too. I have futures on them to do basically everything. But I worry about them when they go on the road, not so much at home. So I agree that they should be able to take care of Michigan State pretty easily.
Before we get to Kip, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to run that Oklahoma game. John, I certainly like it at 6.5 better than like 7. I think John Mateer is a real deal with 5 touchdowns and 3 picks. This is a perfect game for him to find out exactly where he is. It is in development, obviously taking on a pretty decent Auburn squad who's undefeated as of right now. They've only given up 16 points all season long. Their defense, Oklahoma's defense, is lights out. I don't think Auburn or Arnold's has seen a secondary like Oklahoma's going to be thrown at him throughout the season. So we're going to find out what happened. We mentioned Auburn has not beaten a top 15 team in the last 11 years and lost 8 straight road games on the road. Venables, by the way, 5-5 versus ranked teams since he's been in Oklahoma. So he plays about even keel, but I like Oklahoma. If you get it 6.5, take it. Miami, Florida, I think is a really interesting game. And I'm going to under 51.5 in this game. Miami can certainly put up the points. Florida has not done squat. And DJ Lagway has not looked like the quarterback I thought was going to be slinging the ball over the place. Their offense is not good. Their line does not protect him very much. Carson Beck, of course, now all of a sudden we're talking about a Heisman Trophy guy. Just don't lose the game for Miami. He's in a perfect position, just like he was at Georgia a couple of years ago, where he just does not need to be throwing the ball away. And I think he's that kind of guy. I think he's a perfect fit for Miami. But I'm looking like 21-17, 28-17 kind of game like that between these two teams. So I think it goes under the 51.5. And a team that we have not mentioned all week, and I think the wrong team is favored here, and it looks like it's going to go over its win total, but NC State, man, the Wolfpack catching 2.5. C.J. Bailey is doing everything, and he's now running with his legs. A lot of people didn't think he could do that. Mensah's making $7.5 million a year. He's throwing 5 touchdowns and 3 picks. He's had 5 turnovers in his first 3 games of the year for Duke. Duke is not the Duke we thought they were going to be. They're giving up 2.5 to NC State. I take NC State in the money line, certainly if I can get them plus 3. So I'm going to take NC State, Oklahoma minus 6.5, and Miami, Florida under 51.5. Kid Kiefer, who do you like?
You know, a lot of this is who I don't like, as I've kind of developed that personality on this show. But I'm intrigued by the South Carolina at Missouri game. I don't think Missouri's a legitimate contender. I heard somebody on the SEC network going, you know, and watch out for Missouri. You know, they're surging right now. They're playing great football. Well, they're playing 6 straight home games. This is number 4 in the sequence.
Unbelievable.
I don't remember any team having 6 straight home games to start the year. They don't go on the road till October 18th. They play they're homestanding for 2 months in Columbia. They got South Carolina coming in. South Carolina was all hyped up. I know you were high on them, Tony. I think this is kind of the same thing that I described with Florida before. I think the most motivated team is for sure going to be the Gamecocks. The old line from a Richard Pryor concert I went to, talking about Leon Spinks and Muhammad Ali's rematch, Ali kept grabbing him and saying, "Now I'm going to turn you loose, but every time you start some shit, I'm going to grab your ass because I got to have it this evening." I think South Carolina's got to have it this evening on Saturday, or they're pretty much null and void for the rest of the year. Sellers is going to play. You guys said the line, you know, I will admit the line at 13 really attracted my attention right off the bat. I'm not very excited about under 10, but I just think South Carolina finds a way to kind of circle the wagons and stay competitive in this game. They may end up walking out of Columbia, and of course they're from Columbia as well, one of the anomalies of the SEC. But, I mean, I can see this game going right down to the wire and being a field goal game either way. I just don't think the talent disparity is there. I think South Carolina's roster probably, and we know we've talked about it, we've chronicled in the preseason, the defensive losses for South Carolina have been significant. But in that Vandy game, it was 14-7. They were trailing in the second quarter when Sellers went out. And I don't know where they got this Doty guy who came in and played the rest of the game, but he was god-awful. Terrible. And I don't, you know, and that's on Shane Beamer, just like it was on Sunbelt Billy last year when Lagway got hurt and they had the transfer quarterback from Yale who was just not ready for any time, let alone prime. So I just have a sneaking suspicion that South Carolina under Shane Beamer is going to be a competitive in this game. So I'll take the points there. I'm hoping it gets back up to double digits. I mentioned Florida up at 9.5 is a lot more desirable than the 7.5 that I've been operating off. I just think it's another last stand team where they've got a lot more incentive in this game and are going to play for literally their relevant lives. And it's a rivalry game. And if you're going to give me almost any big rivalry game, a 9.5 or 10 points, I'm going to take it. You know, I know Florida's got problems, but I don't think their offense is as bad as they came off last week. I thought the strategy was bad. Lagway threw 5 interceptions, but he wasn't the one calling the plays. They got completely away from Jaden Ball, who I think may be one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in the SEC. The guy doesn't get an...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to know, because rivalry games. So would you take the 19 in the Washington State game?
No.
Would you take the 34 with Oregon State against Oregon?
I certainly wouldn't take the Oregon State bet because the talent disparity is not even comparable. I don't think the Miami and Florida talent is that vast a gulf. So that's my answer to that. I mean, in certain situations, even in rivalry games, the line has to be big if one team is just completely overwhelmingly more talented than the other, in my estimation. So that would be my answer to the question. Washington State, you know, what was the number on that game?
19.5.
Yeah, that's enough. That would tempt me because I don't think, you know, once again, Washington State losing their identity and their coordinator and their quarterback, they probably won't keep it that close, but I don't know how much impressed I am with the Huskies. I think Fish is a really good coach and probably will make progress this year. So I probably wouldn't bite on that game, but I would be inclined to look at a line like that. I only had one other one, and I I'm going to throw it out on the starting lineup on Saturday here, but I just look at this game in Memphis between Arkansas and the Memphis. I just think it's going to be a point of palooza. I think they're going to score a touchdown just about every possession, at least in the early parts of the game. The number is 62, which is ridiculously high, but I can easily see a 38-31 kind of game here. Because Memphis may be being undersold a little. Arkansas just played a game like that against Ole Miss last week. That game went into the 70s. You know, this offense for Memphis is certainly not as prolific as as Ole Miss's. But this is a bigger rivalry game than people realize. Having lived in Memphis, Case was born. He might not like me disclosing this, but Case was born in West Memphis, Arkansas, which is a suburb of Memphis. So people in Memphis think this is a rivalry. I don't think it's the other way around with Arkansas people. So I think you're going to see Memphis really jazzed up for this game, and I think they're going to light the scoreboard up. So I like the over the 62 in that game.
I like it too.
Arkansas giving up 7.5 to Memphis in that particular game. That may be a little bit of a smelly fish as well. Ashton Genty just came out and said, if you drafted a guy like me, give me the damn football. He's rushed 30 times in two games for 81 yards and one touchdown. We have a guy who is about as close as Ashton as anybody is because he's their locker room guy for the Las Vegas Raiders. Any issues inside the Las Vegas locker room, or is this Ashton just a little frustrated early in the season in his career? It's only two games in.
Neither. I mean, this is the type of thing, and I'm not an Ashton Genty guy. I thought it was a bad draft pick. I said at the time, I don't ever think you should take a running back that high, especially not if you're a team like the Raiders that has so much work you need to be anything else. Trust me, I'd be ready to throw Ashton, and I've written a lot about how much I dislike the pick, so I would be ready to throw him under the bus if I thought it was he did something wrong. But he's also like the sweetest kid ever. He did not mean anything by this. This is what you got to just be careful when you see the line. I mean, I think he was asked something like, are you ready to take more of a, get more carries going forward or something like that? And just very soft spoken. He said, well, yeah, if you draft a guy like me, you're going to want to give me a lot of carries. He wasn't demanding the ball. He wasn't saying, Keyshawn Johnson, give me the damn ball. He was just answering it earnestly. But as soon as you saw the words came out, you knew it was going to be a story. It's not the way he meant it. I mean, he finished the quote saying, I've got to be better too. Definitely, I'd say no problems in the locker room. I mean, we'll see if they can bounce back. It was a really bad performance on Monday night. They're getting a break this week with Jaden Daniels probably not playing for the Commanders. He wants the ball more for sure, but he was not complaining. He didn't mean it in that regard. I was kind of worried about how high he was being taken in fantasy drafts. And, I wasn't super high on him again, but I think he's going to have a big game or two here. And maybe this is a good spot. Washington's rush defense last year was second to last in the league. It was like their one big sore spot. I think they gave up like 5 yards per carry. Now, some of that was by design because a lot of modern NFL defenses, they're moving way more to bend, don't break. They just don't want to give up the explosives. But this seems like a pretty good spot for me. Maybe if you want to back Ashton Genty. I ultimately didn't do it prop-wise over under rushing yards just because, again, I'm not quite as high on him. I mean, he really tore up a bad Mountain West last year. I know he had a historic season, but anytime he stepped up in class, like Penn State and whoever else, I mean, they kind of swallowed him up. So I didn't want to go yards, but I did. My best bet in the paper, we do our game day section every Sunday. My best bet was Ashton Genty over 14.5. rushing attempts. So I do think all this hubbub and them talking about wanting to get him more, I do think they're going to give him the opportunities. I just don't know how he cashes in on them. So to make it actionable, Ashton Genty over 14.5 rushing attempts, only up at a few sports books so far, but I think you see him get like 16 to 18 carries this week.
I love when a guy comes in and has never made a bet in his life and he's just looking at it. He's like, isn't Kansas City at the Chiefs pretty good? And you're like, yeah. Then why are they playing one of the worst teams in the National Football League and Brian Daboll can't coach his jock and they're only getting 6.5? Why are the Giants only catching 6.5 on the road to Kansas City? Now, you can look at their trends and how Kansas City's done against the spread over the last couple of years and maybe come up with an answer for that. But, Case, tell me why that line's at 6.5. Why does it look so easy to pick?
I mean, I don't know. It's on the road, an NFL road game. You're not usually going to be more than like a touchdown favorite. And it's still too early to tell. I always say this. We don't really know what the public sides are going to be till Sunday. I can't find it now. But like the one email I get with the exposure report I saw yesterday, like Kansas City wasn't even in the top five. Sentiment has really changed on the Chiefs. People are down on them. So at least early in the week, I don't think they've taken a crazy amount of action. I also think, and I'm not saying the Giants are great or anything, but I think they're probably, I don't think they're like one of the five, they're one of the 10 worst teams, certainly. But I don't think they're on the level of like the Panthers, the Saints, who are the other the Browns, even the Jets. I would have them above all those teams. I mean, you saw last week, I know it was against a bad defense, but they put up 40 points. They might have the best defensive line in the NFL, as weird as that is to say, if Abdul Carter proves to be as good as we think he is. And he certainly looked the part in week one. I mean, already next to Thibodeau and Dexter Lawrence, who I think is the best defensive tackle in the NFL. Like, you know, all these NFL guys always, well, they're getting paid too. I think that's a good thing to apply to the Giants. I mean, they got some professionals, and yeah, they're bad. They're not going to make the playoffs or anything, but they're not a complete pushover. So, you know, all that being said, I did bet a little bit on this game yesterday when there's actually money coming in on the Giants. I've kind of come to the conclusion that maybe we're being a little bit too harsh on the Chiefs. I mean, they played maybe two of the best teams in the NFL and lost to start 0-2. And I was super down on them too. My first NFL column of this year was bet against the Chiefs to win the AFC West. This team's kind of a fraud. But when it touched 5.5 yesterday, I made a small play on Kansas City minus 5.5. It'll be interesting to see where it closes. It'll be interesting to see where the public comes in. I agree with you, Tony, based on the past, you think it would be the Chiefs, but they really haven't been getting that type of support this year. And I think a lot of people are alarmed by the 0-2, and just, I mean, they just have no weapons right now with Worthy and Rashee Rice out. I know Worthy's actually practicing this week. I'd be kind of surprised if he played. That'd be one way where I'd see the Chiefs taking some action in this closing, maybe 7 or a touch higher if they do get Xavier Worthy back.
Guy, another number that attracts a lot of people are picks and the one-pointers, because you really don't have to give up much. You can just win the football game and you win your bet. There's a couple of them that I think are really interesting. I want you to talk about those first and give me your NFL plays. Houston at Jacksonville, a sneaky good game. Jacksonville giving up 1.5. And Dallas giving up 1.5 at the Bears. Give me those two games right there. What do you see? Why the line's so small? And give me some of your plays. Yeah, some of y'all for sure.
Well, I got Dallas, the line this morning, plus 1 now. I like the over in that game, just depending weather. Dallas does not typically play as well on the road, but I don't think the Bears defense is great. I kind of like the over in that. There's not a lot to it. You know, I really want to see what happens. You know, the Houston Jacksonville game, I'm a D'Amico Ryans fan, so it's hard for me to bet those games because I go in with my heart and I'm always on Houston. That's a game a better ask to somebody else, because I like the way D'Amico Ryans coaches and the way that his defense plays. I'm really interested to see what happens in that Atlanta Carolina game with, you know, it coming out this week, from his coach that Bijan Robinson is by far the best player in the NFL. So how Carolina's defense is going to react to that to shut him down.
Yeah, no doubt. Kip, you've looked around the National Football League. Saturday's first. We've gone through that. What do you like on Sunday?
I just got a couple of games kind of penciled out here. I have been all against the Rams the first 2 weeks, and they've bit me right you know where. They managed to win in Nashville last week. The game was competitive until, I don't know. I think Case has already declared Tennessee's coach the worst hire in a number of years in the NFL. And the little bit of that game I saw, I was certainly on board with that, because I thought that was a tough spot for the Rams after opening up and winning a really close, ugly game against the Texans, 14-9. I like the home team getting 6, I think, last week in Nashville, but I think Kai said it best on Tuesday. They got to let Cam Ward be Cam Ward and not just be a guy handing the ball off if they're going to have any chance to be competitive. So I'm still against the Rams this week as they go to Philadelphia. I think the Eagles showed a couple of times last year that, you know, there were games that they were not as charged up to play, but I just think they're a better team. I still don't think Matthew Stafford's 100%, although he's performed okay. I probably am not as high on the Rams overall as a lot of other people are, but I just don't see them continuing. I don't see the Rams a 3-0 team, so that may sound like a stupid reason, but I think the Eagles will win that game. And the line, I don't know where it is today, you guys. I was looking earlier and we get like 3.5 or 4.
Three and a half, yeah.
Even some juice threes now. You can get some minus three, minus
what one. What do we got for the line on that game?
Three and a half.
As I may have lost my hearing here.
I think you have. Three and a half is what it
anyway,
is.
Anyway, yeah, I'm assuming you guys can still hear me. I also like the Steelers this week, and I'm going to take the Seahawks over the Morbid Saints.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Aaron Rodgers bites back. I saw something in the bottom of the screen this morning. Does he have to be Superman in order to win football games for Pittsburgh? I don't think he does. I don't think he also needs to throw 4 touchdowns and 0 picks every week either to win, particularly with Pittsburgh's defense. But I will say Cincinnati catching 2.5. I don't think it's doom and gloom. I think they start the season 3-0. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs. Jake Browning, I think we may have said on the show, it may have been UK saying, listen, I like Cincinnati's shots making the playoffs better with Jake Browning because he doesn't hold on to the damn football so long. And he's gotten a lot of playing time for the Cincinnati Bengals. He actually has been filling in quite well for one Joe Burrow. Now, would I rather have Joe? Of course I would. But I don't see the huge drop-off in talent between Joe and Jake. So I think Cincinnati catching 2.5, I'll buy it up to 3. And that Baltimore-Detroit game, I can't decide what I'm looking at from Detroit. They had such a special season last year. It almost feels like some type of sophomoric feeling to it. Like a lot of Detroit fans are kind of holding on. They're holding their breath to see if it was for real or not. They're catching 4.5 at Baltimore. I think that could be just a hell of a game. What do you think, Case?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that so much money has come in on Detroit. It could be a good game. I'm really high on both these teams. I mean, we saw this open like 6, 6.5, now 4.5. I have to bet Baltimore at 4.5. I know I probably sound a lot like Kai, but I just think there's a gap between, and I know they haven't got it done in the playoffs. They haven't won the Super Bowl, but Baltimore is just by far, by the numbers, the best team in the NFL. There's a gap between them and everyone else. I mean, I would lay 4.5 with them at home against anyone. So maybe it comes back to bite me because I like Detroit too. But as of right now, I'm definitely laying it on a Monday Night Football.
All right, MLB, by the way, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com at K4Winners on Instagram, not to mention Facebook. You can find us on X. You can find us anywhere. And, of course, the YouTube channel, Tony Curry Radio, TKR. Get the TKR up. Like 100,000 folks have already done that. We've had 18 different podcasts, including this one here. And, of course, special thanks to Coastal Sports Digital Network for partnering up with Tony Curry Radio and K4Wins. We love them. Major League Baseball, 10 games or less. Most teams have played somewhere between the 150 game mark right now. My Cincinnati Reds almost get a no-no last night for Green. He goes complete, you know, one hit shutout against the Cubs, 1-0. They're now 2 games out. They're the next best team to perhaps, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I just kind of wrote them off. With 9 games left, Cincinnati's got a 17% shot at making the playoffs. It would be really fun for me as a Cincinnati Reds fan to see my baseball team actually playing in October. I would love that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but they got something to play for in Cincinnati in mid-September. And whenever that happens, it's a pretty special town to be in. Kai, what do we look like in baseball, man, as we come down to the nitty-gritty the last couple of weeks?
I mean, I wrote it down before the show, and I know how you feel. I think the Mets and Arizona are the last two spots there from the National League. But although the Mets have sucked here lately, but Philly, Milwaukee, the Cubs, the Dodgers, I'm sorry, fighting for the last spot. Philly, the Milwaukee, the Cubs, the Dodgers, and San Diego, especially with the schedules these guys have left, I think are there. And it's New York, the Mets, and Arizona, unless Cincinnati just does something, you know, super special. The Mets are at the Cubs next week. And then, looking at the American League also, I think Toronto, Detroit, Seattle, and New York are the four that are in. And then you've got Houston, Boston, Cleveland, Seattle, I'm sorry, also up there just trying to get that last spot. You know, Cleveland's 10 games over 500 at 81-71.
That's
and
unbelievable. Run differential
is -23.
They're not any good. I can't believe they're 10 games over 500.
They won 7 games in a row.
They're right there. I mean, just point
it's
blank,
insane.
They're there. And they're at Minnesota right now, and they wrap up with Detroit next week. So that's difficult for them, you know, and for Boston, they're at Tampa Bay and then they end at Toronto. So everything favors, you know, right now, some teams like New York getting that fourth spot and hosting. And then I hate it, Tony, just looking at the matchups coming up. It's very difficult to think that Cincinnati makes it. I'm not saying they don't have a chance.
Yeah, it is.
70% is better than the Braves, who are going to get eliminated this weekend officially.
I eliminated them in May.
They lost. They lost 1-0 3 days in a row. And you look at those little runs during a baseball season. You go, this is going to come back and bite them in the ass. And they had that little. It's like it's 162 games. It's a huge thing. And you wouldn't think that you could point your point at one game or two games, but they lost 1-0 three nights in a row. And I said, one of those games is going to bite them in the ass. They'll come one game short of making the playoffs, and that appears to be happening again. I do think though their coach, obviously their manager, who I just absolutely love, I think they're going to be a playoff contender in the future, and I think that's why they brought him in this year, maybe just to be a little earlier, but they are doing better than a lot of people thought they would, so we'll see what happens. Let me ask you this real quick. If we only have a couple minutes left, and we can go around the horn on this thing. Baseball is so damn hard right now because the lines are so flipping tight, and normally where you'd see a team, we don't like to go 160, 170, 180 favorites for obvious reasons. But where you used to see a schemes that maybe 130, now all of a sudden it's 150 because you don't know what the other team's throwing out. People have thrown the towel in, and that's sometimes when baseball teams play their best. That's probably why Cleveland's won 7 games in a row, because they counted themselves out and they're just playing relaxed. When you go into the playoffs and you're talking about 5-game series, 7-game series, how do you scrutinize those numbers, Kai, when you talk about Major League Baseball, particularly over-unders? Because I know you're an over-under guy. I love playing overs in Major League Baseball, but you're not going to see any 9.5s in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, I love playing unders. I've done it for years. I love and looking at some of these things. I've already taken, and I think Casey's going to disagree with me on this, but I've already taken Milwaukee in just about every single playoff scenario I could take to win it all, because I love their pitching. I like the youth on that team. If Boston makes the playoffs, I kind of like Boston in the playoffs. If Roman Anthony is definitely back because of the youth. And they don't know they're not supposed to win. They don't know what we all know, that the Dodgers are the greatest thing since sliced bread and the Yankees are the greatest thing since sliced bread. And they're supposed to win all these games. Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, they don't know it. I like Toronto a little bit better than Boston, even though I'm a Red Sox fan in those. But I like pitching matchups, especially when I look at the first 3 games. If you have a 5 or 7 game series, I like looking at the pitching matchups and then seeing, you know, what Major League Baseball a manager is willing to put someone in the bullpen or bring some back off of a day or 2 days rest in order to play in long situations. So looking at stuff like that, just really love looking at that, and absolutely love the playoffs way more than the regular season as far as betting day-to-day Major League Baseball, because you never know who's going to have to take a day off from DHing in Major League Baseball, which is, you know, so rough to get up there and bat 3 times. It's really, really taxing on the body.
We're having that major day. It only happens a couple times during the entire season when we see all 4 major sports playing at the same time. Hockey's kicking up here in October. I cannot wait for hockey to kick off. Of course, we've got a couple of people in this box right here that are huge hockey fans. So if you're thinking, I ain't gonna bet on hockey, listen, you want to win some money? You want to win some money? Then you bet on some hockey. It's gonna be unbelievable. Hockey, Major League Baseball, NFL, and college football at the same time, man. What a great time of the year. So it's good stuff. Better time to be checking out K4Sports.com. K4Sports.com. We just redid the site. Kai's did a wonderful job at picking all those games. And of course, we do pick games thoroughly and several times during the day. And of course, that happens on Saturdays and Sundays as well. Go to K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. You can also check us out on our YouTube page, Instagram, and X as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. Let's get some big time winners, make some bankroll this week, and we'll catch you back on Tuesday, okay?
I'm going to say it for the first time in my life. Go Gators!
Go Gators. See you guys. Thank you, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.